listening to Radio Arian. At RadioArian.com.
And welcome to Arian Insights. You're listening to me, Sven Longshanks, and I'm very pleased to welcome a special guest today who I've actually had the pleasure of meeting a couple of times now. The first time I met him was in Lithuania in their March for Independence Against Communism. And he was responsible for hospitality for nationalists from other countries. And he was a really good host. And I remember being really impressed by the toasts that he gave afterwards, which were more like small speeches, talking about the camaraderie between different nationalists, how you always know that you are among good people when you are among nationalists. They don't necessarily have to be nationalists from your own nation. He's just a really good all-round guy. And he's now actually the chairman of the Lithuanian Nationalist Youth Union. So I'm going to ask him a few questions about that and some bits and pieces about Lithuania as well and nationalism in general. So I'll introduce Mindaugas Sidoravičius. How are you doing today, Mindaugas?
Yeah, I'm busy as always, but I feel excited because when I engage in nationalist activities, it always gives me a drive.
Yeah, that's what's always impressed me about you. You know, you really seem to just feed off nationalism, and we really do need more people like you. Now, you're from the Lithuanian Nationalist Youth Union. Did you form this group, or were they pre-existing?
They were pre-existing. I joined it somewhere in 2011.
Right. So they've been going for quite a while. And are they separate to the Lithuanian Nationalist Union? The youth part of it, is that correct?
Well, it's not a youth part. It's just a youth organization. We don't have any official treaty of cooperation with that party. But yeah, we have members inside the political party and youth organization.
Right, right. What are the Nationalist Youth Union's policies then? Obviously, they're nationalist policies, but...
Yeah, they are obviously nationalist policies, but to describe them more correctly, I can tell you a couple of our slogans which we use on our events. So one of them is Lithuania for Lithuanians and Lithuanians for Lithuania. And the slogan which I most like, which describes the like a third position which we are holding, is not for East or the West, Lithuania for Lithuanian children. That slogan actually sounds better in Lithuanian language.
Yeah, it sounds good in English as well. I think this is what we need to get home to people, that it's for the next generations that we're doing this. And we're not in it for ourselves, we're in it for our nation and our descendants and our grandchildren. And we need to keep our lands for our own people. Well, how did you get the funding then for the youth union? Because I hear that was quite a success that you had with this. Could you describe that a little bit for us?
I wouldn't describe it as a success compared to the other youth organizations, because they have ability to apply for the funding from European Union funds. We don't have that chance because no one wants to, as we know, European Union is a leftist organization, and no one from there wants to finance nationalists. Compared to what we had like before I joined the organization, we had some progress in that. At the moment, we are in a little decline, but I'm thinking that better times will come soon. So we get our funding from people's donations, from membership fee, and we also apply for the competitions which the state state announces a competition for youth organizations or just NGOs, and we just make applications to receive funding for certain projects or certain events.
Yes, that's what I was referring to, the competition that you won. So you actually got funding from the government.
From the government.
That's the impressive thing, because most nationalist groups don't get funding from the government. So that is a real achievement. I think that you've actually managed to do that.
I know the situation in Western Europe and in Lithuania. It's always the same cultural Marxism everywhere, but still state acts more righteously towards everyone, even though we are not the ones who receive most funding from the state.
Yeah, it's still impressive anyway. So what sort of activities do the Nationalist Youth Union get involved in? What are the sort of things that you do?
It's a long list if I would have to tell, but I prepared some list to tell you about that. Well, our main traditional events include blood donation action in commemoration to our national heroes who were brutally murdered and crushed by Soviet tanks in 1991, January 13th. We have a state restoration procession in Kaunas on February 16th, Independence Day restoration procession in Vilnius on March 11th, which you attended just recently. Every April, we participate in an annual nationwide environmental protection action, which name is Let's Do It. In that action, thousands of Lithuanians gather in forests and parks in order to collect garbage. But it's not even organized by our organization. It's the event organized by ever, but every organization who just wants to do something good for Lithuanian environment participates in that action. After that, in June, we commemorate our heroes of World War II who fought against Polish. They were in cooperation with Nazis because we didn't have the other choice at that time. We had a deal with Nazis that we will join their ranks, but we will only defend our national borders. So, Nazis broke that deal, and some of those heroes were caught and shot. Others later joined the Forest Brothers, who succeeded in escaping execution. Then when summer starts, we start to prepare for our ethnocultural camp, which is called Our Roots Are Baltic. And we also make inner camps for our members only. In autumn, we commemorate a day of Baltic unity. And that's probably all the traditional events we have throughout the year, but that's definitely not all the events. We participate and organize in 40 events, up to 40 events every year. So we make discussions with our national heroes, with people who were under the Soviet oppression or were resisting against it. As I say, it would be a long list of just we are orientating what to do according to the political situation. Sometimes we try to defend the honor of our national heroes when some anti-nationalist organization try to taint their biography.
So yeah, we hear a lot about that.
All.
We hear a lot about that from Russia today, where they're trying to smear the Lithuanians. So that's a lot of activities that you get involved in, and it's good that environmental one, where you're picking up the garbage and you're taking part with other youth organisations there, and they're not sort of campaigning to get you banned from taking part. So you know that's really good. It seems in Lithuania nationalism is a lot more accepted than it is in the West. Now I notice you have a really interesting symbol that you use. It's like a three-legged swastika. I think it's called the Triskelion or the Triskelion. I notice that it's used a lot in the Baltics, and you have your own one made up of grass snakes as well, the Lithuanian one. Can you tell us a bit about the Youth Union swastika and also the Lithuanian one and what it symbolizes?
Okay, so about our flag, it was about our flag of our organization. It was designed by our first chairman, Marius Kundrotas. It consists of that Triskelion, as you told, of our national flag and flag of Prussian Lithuania. That Triskelion, it's our Baltic pagan symbol of sun. It's simply like in every region, swastika is considered a pagan symbol of sun. And the reason why you saw swastikas made of grass snakes, it's because a grass snake was considered a holy creature in our Baltic mythology.
And didn't you have an evil version, which was the adder, and the good version that was the grass snake? Is that correct?
Evil version. Can you repeat the question?
Yeah, I heard there was a evil snake was the adder, which is a viper, which has a poisonous bite, and the grass snake was a good one because it didn't bite.
But we don't like. Me personally, I have never seen that evil snake used somewhere in symbols. Maybe our ethnic culture is showing off more of the positive things. I think that's a good thing.
Yeah, there are symbols like the swastika symbols and nationalism symbols and flags everywhere in Lithuania. There's been a real resurgence, I think, of nationalism since it was repressed under communism. And maybe we'll go into that a little bit further on. But just to find out a bit more about you, I noticed in interviews that you've given before, you say you're very much into anime, which seems to be quite common among white nationalists. Loads of people seem to be into anime. And I just wondered, why do you think this is when it's not white? And how do you fit it in with your nationalist beliefs?
First of all, I'm a racial realist. I don't think that some race is superior to other, and I'm never against people. I'm against leftist ideologies. Some races jump better, other races play chess better, other race made the best culture in the world, which we have now. It's Western culture, so everyone has something which is in their genes, in their blood, and I don't see any contradictions with me liking anime, because because Japanese remained conservative and very close to their culture, only because of that I am now able to see anime, because that Japanese culture developed in their own sort of way. You don't see anything similar in other nations or in other races. I don't see any contradiction here. And why it's common amongst white nationalists? Well, I think because once my former colleague told me that Japanese, what they lack in their real life, they use it in their art, mostly animes and movies. So Japanese are very closed people, very introvertic, or how should I say it, very introvertic people. And what they lack, they describe that in their works of art. And for me, I also see in anime what I lack in real life. I see ideals, not like ideological ideals, but like nationalism or something, or leftism or something like that. I see like moral ideals of friendship, of comrades, of honor, of fight, and in this world, every person is worse and worse compared to each other. So, and this kind of rotten world even corrupts the best people. And makes them corrupted in some way. So I find inspiration and escape from this world. I find that escape in anime. And I think that other white nationalists maybe think in some kind of similar way.
I think that's a great answer. I think that's a really good answer, that they're good at doing it. So why be against it? It is something that we don't have ourselves anymore, and all our animation seems to be turning things on their heads. I mean, Disney are coming out with stuff where you've got lesbian princesses, and you've got evil witches taking the place of the good people in our previous folktales. So at least there's some animation that's coming out that's still conservative. And as you say, it expresses the Japanese national identity, a Japanese racial soul. And all the races have a different racial soul. So I can understand
that. You see a lot of like samurai spirit in some animes. But to be just, situation with anime is also getting worse. There are more perversive animes, more animes with fan service. Fan service means naked or half naked girls, and those animes are getting more popular. And what the people all around the world demand, the great animators do that. So situation with anime is also getting worse.
So yeah, that's becoming degenerate as well.
There was always, especially in Japanese culture, if someone is interested, they can look out for old comics. Japanese always had some perversion in their comics and their animes, but you don't have to watch that or read that. You can only pick out the good stuff.
Okay, so it's now starting to make its way into the more conservative stuff. Well, let's move back to Lithuania then. Now, Lithuania is probably around 99% white, I would say, just from my experience there. Yet you still have problems with ethnic minorities. Now, this will come as a surprise to some of our audience, but could you describe how these problems are caused and by whom?
Well, those problems, first thing, we Lithuanian nationalists, we don't have any problems with minorities. We just have problems with some organizations, because not every, my best friend is Russian, like he was born in Russian family, but he's not very much into the politics, so we don't fight about that. So we don't have problems with minorities. We have problems with organizations which probably are influenced by our old big brother, our old country, which has big brother issues. I mean Russia. So they are influencing Russians and Polish to make a chaos in society, and that's why we have problems. Polish and Russians who learn Lithuania, who learn Lithuanian language, who attend Lithuanian schools, mostly they tend to be liberal or leftist, and they don't really like being a part of Russian or Polish organizations. So they're just, those organizations, they're just influenced by Russia. That's all. That's why we have this. And since our government was always mostly the leftist and cultural Marxist, they didn't consider it as this thing as a problem. They always told that it's a Lithuanian fault, that we don't have some, don't give some rights to them or something like that. So. Yeah.
I can understand. So they say that you don't do enough for the minorities, and they should have special rights. So this is similar to what the Jews did for the blacks, so with their civil rights movement. And we get the same over here in Britain with Muslims, where we've got Jews and Muslims trying to get a special status for Muslims so that they can't be criticized at all, so that they have lower test scores to get into the police, and various things like that. So is it similar to things like that, but it's Polish and Russian organizations that are doing this? And are the Jews also involved in that, or is it just the Russians? Or do you mean Russian Jews when you say that?
Well, I never really much thought about Jews, but all I can say, there's in Vilnius, we have a Jewish school, which is the only school of ethnic minorities in Lithuania, which teaches its pupils normal Lithuanian language course, because the principal of that school is very conservative. He sometimes criticizes our movement, but very softly. But still, I think that's very hypocritical, because as he and those conservative Jews, they want to preserve their own culture, and I can understand that. So they should understand, as Lithuanian nationalists, that we also want to preserve our national identity. But there is other organization, which is Lithuanian Jewish, just consists of Lithuanian Jewish. Jewish in Lithuania are very small minority. And recently there was a statement in the press, and that statement was made by our intelligence, Lithuanian intelligence agency, where it was written that tensions between Jews and Lithuanians are created also by intelligence agencies from Russia. So that's the answer.
Right. Okay. Okay. I think that pretty much answers it. It's probably obviously Jewish agencies that are influenced by Russia. I'd say there's probably a bit of co-working between the two, because that seems to be what they do elsewhere. They promote nationalism for themselves and preserve their identity, but then seek to disrupt the identity of the nations that they live among. Now, I noticed that after the march, there's a website, I'm trying to think of the name of it, Redefining History or Changing History or something like that. And it was a Jew that writes this. And
Defending History.
Defending History. Yeah, and he was saying, oh, this march needs to be stopped. And I just thought, well, how can he say that the government should stop this march when, you know, the rest of Lithuania are behind it? What gives him the right to say that it should be stopped because he doesn't like it? You know, and that just sort of summed it up for me, that the way that these Jews behave elsewhere, and I was seeing them behaving the same way in Lithuania there.
The person you are referring to, his name is David Katz, and he, even though he lives in Lithuania for up to 10 years now, he doesn't speak Lithuanian in Lithuanian language out of the principle. So he's just a Shaolinist. He's a member of Simon Wiesenthal Center, and he's just getting money for his life out of creating this false bogus about us being neo-Nazis and so on. So he just he makes a living out of it. So he's just a scum.
That's incredible. He's only been there for 10 years, and yet he thinks he has the right to demand that, the government shut down the march where you celebrate independence from communism. It's just the nerve to just live in a country for 10 years and start demanding what the government should do. Well, I've heard that Vilnius was only 6% Lithuanian in way back in 1900. So what is the percentage now, and how were you able to remove all those foreigners peacefully?
Currently, the percentage of Lithuanians living in Vilnius is about 63%. And how it became that way, that it was only 6% of population? Well, we were for more than 100 years. They remember we were under the Soviet occupation. The use of Lithuanian language was repressed. Before that, we were in the common statehood with Poland, so we were also influenced by Polish culture. We were Polonized, and how it became 63% now? Well, it was after the Soviet occupation. A lot of Lithuanians went from the villages, migrated from the villages to Vilnius, because it was better work conditions and so on for them to live in the capital. And not to mention that you can't really say that there were only 6% in 1900s because of the occupation of Russian Empire. People were afraid to describe themselves as Lithuanian, so they wrote Polish, Russian, or any other nationality except from Lithuania. That's why you have those kind of numbers.
Oh, that's interesting. I hadn't thought of that. I should imagine quite a few people left after the Soviet occupation when they realized that the Germans were coming in there. I should imagine quite a few people actually left that had been a part of the Soviet occupation because they didn't want to be tried for their crimes against the Lithuanian people. And maybe we'll go into that a little bit later on. Well, one of the things that I noticed while I was there, Mindaugas, you have a picture of the president of Lithuania up on your office door, and you have a lot of admiration for this president, who was the president of Lithuania between the wars. Now, who was this president, and why is he so important to you?
He was, as you said, he was a president between the two world wars. He took his position by military overthrow, even though there was no bloodshed on that day in 1926, December 17th. So I basically, why I admire him, because when now I go to elections and I have to vote for a president, we never nationalist, we never have our candidate, and I have to pick one of the less evil president, but basically most of them are just cultural Marxists. So I admire that president because he was nationalist, and because under his rule there was no such perverse thing as liberal democracy. It was an authoritarian regime. It was consistent also with some civil liberties which we don't have, and it was a nationalist regime. That's why I admire him.
It was almost like a forerunner to fascism then, would you say? Before we had fascism, it was similar along those sort of lines, would you say?
The same president, he told that he was very Lithuanian in that sense of way. He told that no foreign ideology could fit the Lithuanian spirit. So, yeah, it was authoritarian regime, but it was never referred to as a fascist or neo-Nazi regime because it because we are Lithuanians, and why should we pick a foreign ideology? And he proved that we can have our own regime, our own nationalist regime, without adapting foreign ideologies.
And it worked, and the regime obviously worked. They stayed in power between the wars, and it's interesting that you say that it was they took power, so it was almost like a revolution, but it was bloodless. It was a bloodless coup, and
yeah,
that's like Gaddafi's revolution. Nobody died during that. And the National Socialists, they came to power by being voted to power. So sometimes these authoritarian regimes, they have a lot of success and things go well. But if the regime take power through killing lots of people, then obviously it started off in a bad way, and there's no way that it can get any better if it starts like that. Well, could you name some other Lithuanian national heroes for us then, and tell us what they did?
Well, we had, you can't compare one hero to another because we had a lot of those and every one of them played the part in our history. And because of that, we now have an independent country. So, but I can tell one person, it was a forest brother, Lionginas Baliukevičius. His nickname was Dzūkas. Dzūkija is a region in Lithuania. He was he was a county chief of the partisans in southern Lithuania. I read his diary. He, of course, as most of our forest brothers, he died from the Soviet regime, and but that he was a chief means that he was smart enough, and by reading his diary I understood that he had very nationalist ideology. And actually a lot of forest brothers who are now admired by even conservatives and liberals, they actually all had this conservative and more like nationalist ideology. So it's hypocritical from the liberal point of from the liberals to say that we admire forest brothers, but nationalism is bad. Because only thing why they fought are why they fought against Soviets in the guerrilla war, it was because of the regime of that president, which we talked about earlier, President Antanas Smetona, because under his rule, we had nationalist education, nationalist policies, nationalist culture. And because of that, after we were occupied by Soviets, only because of that, young people of my age, they were ideologically righteous, and because of that they fought against Soviets. Other heroes, the mostly recent ones, are January 13th heroes from 1991. After declaration of our restoration of independence, Soviets couldn't take it, and they sent troops, sent tanks to Lithuania, tried to occupy our TV tower, our house of press, and people were gathering around those buildings, also around our parliament, to defend it, and 14 people died defending it, and 600 were injured. So these are the recent ones, but we had a lot of heroes from grand dukes to people who were who were transporting books from other countries to Lithuania when under the repressions of Soviet Empire, of Russian Empire, Lithuanian language was oppressed, and we couldn't have it was forbidden to print books in Lithuanian and to teach Lithuanian, even that in some parts.
So you had people that would smuggle in books. This is way before the Soviet repression. This is
During the occupation by Russian Empire. They were the books at that time were contraband, something like that.
It's interesting because there was a similar thing happening in Wales. They wouldn't let the Welsh speak the Welsh language, and they wouldn't let them print books. I don't know if people were actually smuggling books into them. So, you know, some brave people, really brave and courageous people in Lithuania's history fighting for your independence. When I was in Lithuania in 2015 for your independence march, I noticed a lot of support for the Ukraine revolution, which has been lacking in the Western countries among nationalists. Why do you think this is?
First thing is that it's our geopolitical interest that Ukraine wins this war and takes back its lands. It's the first thing. We had a common history. We occupied the region where now Ukraine is, the Grand Duchy occupied it, but it wasn't, don't get me wrong, it wasn't like that, something like Russian Empire occupation or Soviet occupation. Some events, one historian, Ukrainian historian called our occupation like golden occupation or something, velvet occupation. It was velvet occupation because we weren't oppressing the people of that region. We were just mostly taking taxes, and we didn't oppress their culture and nothing else. So this is the first thing. The other thing, I think from my nationalist point of view, that according to one Lithuanian, Ukrainian slogan, every nation has the right to live in their God-given land. So I think it's just righteous to support not only Ukraine, but to support every nation, doesn't matter of where it is and from what race it consists of, because only that way we can defeat the globalism and cultural Marxism, to come together and live in a world of nations, not in some multicultural shithole.
So there's a lot more to it than just Lithuania was under Soviet occupation and the Ukraine were also under Soviet occupation then.
Yeah, it's more to it, yeah.
And you were the first country to actually break free from the Soviet Union. Could you describe a bit how that happened? I know you've spoken just a minute ago about the heroes that the Soviets came in with the tanks, but I know there's more to it than that. There's quite a lot of interesting events happened when you broke free from the Soviet Union. Could you describe a bit more about how that happened?
Yeah, Soviet Union at that time was weak, and we felt that we had our national resistance movement, which was all over across Lithuania. It started with with protests in 1988, I believe, as I remember. Well, we had resistance against Soviet Union since we were occupied. We had people who were celebrating Lithuanian or pagan celebrations, which were also repressed by Soviet Union. So it wasn't like it just happened. We resisted. We had people, heroes who resisted all the way along till 1988. And then it was like a time ticking bomb. It had to happen. And it happened in 1988. And after the protest, the righteous people, got into the Soviet parliament, Lithuanian Soviet parliament, and we had a big word in that, because I said it was just a time ticking bomb. And it went to that, those parliamentaries, they signed the Treaty of Restoration of Our Independence. Without resistance after the World War II, we wouldn't have that big national movement in the 1880s. So, and about those heroes, almost a year passed, and in the January 13th, it didn't happen in January 13th. It happened a few days back. The Soviet used their troops and tanks to invade Lithuania, but without a fight, with songs, with strength of our spirit, we were able to defend that independence which we just recently regained. We are a small nation, but we are a proud one. So we can't always use the force. We have to use our head, and that's what it was used. We used our heads, and it was a good tactics, because we later after that we could show to the world that we didn't kill anyone. We were righteous. We were just defending what is rightly ours. And Soviets had to back off.
That's interesting. So it was because of the Forest Brothers and the Partisans kept the spirit of nationalism going, and that was continued by the Lithuanian people. And you can draw a line going straight back from there to the president in between the two world wars that encouraged spirit of nationalism that kept going right the way through until finally flowering and breaking free from the Soviet Union, 70 years later. It's quite an incredible story. What was Lithuania like under the Soviets? How did they repress nationalism?
First, it was they propagated their socialist ideology. They oppressed celebrating of our national holidays. The intelligence agency KGB was tracking people from resistance movements, torturing them, sometimes killing them. But as they told, as that time went on, the Soviet regime became weaker and more softer. So it was just like that.
Did they take the flag away from you? And did they say that?
It was forbidden. Of course, it's like I can't even think. To tell about those things. Of course, it was forbidden to raise the Lithuanian flag. that's the basics of socialists repressing nationalists.
Right. So that again is probably why there's been a resurgence of nationalism afterwards. It really does bring it into focus that nationalism is the opposite of communism, and nationalism is a threat to communism. It's these two forces, one against another, nationalism against communism. Well, since communism's fell, supposedly the Soviet Union has fallen. Although we have cultural Marxism and a sort of soft communism in the West, Russia is supposedly free of communism now. So what is the relationship like between Russia and Lithuania now?
I don't think that Russia is free from communism now, because only in Moscow you have like millions of Muslims. So it's also a multicultural city. I've read in nationalist forums, I talked to people that not all nationalists are accepted by Putin's regime. Some of them are in prisons because of their nationalist activities. And regarding the Soviet Union, supposedly they say that people usually think that Soviet Union was free of cultural Marxism. Well, it was that way only after Stalin, but after came to the power. But before that, under the Lenin's ruling, it was quite culturally Marxist, union. So, and now Lithuania's relationship with Russia, well, as I told before, Russia has its interest in regaining Lithuanian control of the Lithuania. So, but we want to stay independent, and there's a conflict because we have this. Some Russians don't even most radical, like chauvinist Russians. They think that Lithuania isn't even worthy of being considered a nation. So it's hard to answer. What kind of relationship can be between our states if Russia still has its imperialist ambitions?
Okay, so well, you're share NATO's concern that Russia will invade the Baltics then?
We can't not share this concern because we had a common history with Russia, as we talked before. We have a lot of Russian propaganda in Lithuania, pro-Russian propaganda in Lithuania. We have Russian troops practicing near our Lithuanian borders from time to time. So it's like they're preparing for something.
Right, and it's interesting that you can get this information from Russia, obviously, because your language is closer to that one. Do you speak Russian yourself? Can you to understand what they're saying?
I don't speak Russian very often. Because of that, my Russian became dull. But yeah, I perfectly understand Russian. I speak fluent Russian. I read Russian. I have a problem with Russian letters.
Yeah, because we're not likely to learn this stuff here in the West, because speaking Russian or being able to translate Russian is quite a rare thing. It's not something that many people in the West know. But what's the general feeling among the nation about the EU then? And what are your personal opinions on it?
The opinion of our society or of our nation is, well, I can't tell. We have conservatives, liberals, nationalists. Personally, what I think is that we shouldn't have had joined the European Union, because now if it falls or if we get out of it, there will be a big geopolitical destabilization and chaotic geopolitical situation is bad for our country small as ours. I think about European Union that nationalists from all the European Union countries should get into the parliament, into European Parliament, and reform it. That's my opinion. I think that would be a best case scenario.
Well, that's interesting, because in Britain, I get the feeling that most people just want to leave. They just want to leave the EU. But there's another option there that you're saying is if nationalists take power and were to then reform it. Obviously, that would mean that the countries kept their sovereignty, which is what seems to be being eroded by the EU. Well, you were right in the heart of it recently. I hear you were actually in Brussels, and this was shortly before the recent attack. So what were your impressions of Brussels?
I was in Brussels the same day when they had the anti-terrorist operation where a few officers were injured and one of the suspects was killed. And it happened not more than 5 kilometers from the hostel I was staying. So, and my impression about Brussels, it's the same as London, as I was in London last year, and my impressions are everywhere you go, you see the city is dirty. Vilnius is much cleaner. It stinks in some parts, which you don't see very often in Vilnius. It's full of Muslims. It's full of the degenerated people who just look somehow ill and act like psychos. Seriously, we also have those kinds of people in Lithuania, but you don't see them, a lot of them like that in Vilnius. So I saw the future of Lithuania if we accept refugees. And my impression was bad. Nothing more else to say.
Obviously, Lithuania doesn't have very many Muslims, and it doesn't have many refugees. Is there any Muslim community in Lithuania, or is there any black community in Lithuania at all?
We have blacks, but I didn't hear there is something, I think, probably, but they didn't made anything yet, no statements. We have a Muslim community, but those Muslims are not the same as refugees. They were brought to Lithuania in the Middle Ages by our Grand Duke Vytautas. They were brought to us from Ukraine, as I remember, and they integrated perfectly. We never had, we don't have, and I hope and that we will never have problems with them.
And so they were moved there a long time ago, and it's not like the invasion that we're suffering now in the rest of
Europe.
No,
it's totally different. We have no problems, and I even plan to attend one of the conferences made by Muslim society.
Well, that's interesting. I'm sure you'll learn quite a lot there. Well, just one, but before we get to the end here, there's one question which I missed out, which is just a personal question of mine. While I was over there, I noticed that there were no estate agents. I mean, over here in Britain, we have these shops selling houses everywhere, and I noticed there was no estate agents there. Is it frowned on at all, selling land or selling houses, or how does that happen there?
You are asking what's the policy in Lithuania about real estate or something like that?
Yes.
Well, we have those kind of agencies, but I never really thought about it. We don't, it's just not like we have any issues or a lot of issues which would make resonance in the society. So I really can't answer that question. So of course, we have real estate agencies. That's normal, I think, in capitalist society.
Yeah, this is also part of it. It would have been a changeover after communism to having a state, real estate. I was wondering if land was passed down to farmland was passed down to the farmers. I know the National Socialists, when they came to power, they brought in a law that land couldn't be sold, farmland couldn't be sold. It had to be passed on down to the descendants. And I wondered if there was something similar to that in Lithuania to prevent land being sold to foreign businesses or multinational corporations, so that the land remained in Lithuanians' hands.
Well, we tried to make a referendum to forbid foreigners buy a land, it almost succeeded, but it made some resonance in society. Our politicians made some barriers for foreigners and even for Lithuanians to buy. We had made reforms with buying the land, and politicians actually made it worse recently. But like, I'm not in the Greens, and I understand that farming land should be used only for farming, and it should be mostly used by Lithuanians for the reasons you told. But according to that, we don't have a good policy. That only it only shows because a lot of stuff that grows, vegetables, fruits, we get from Poland, because from Poland it is cheaper to get them. So we are farming. Policy, it's not something we can be proud of, but it's because of wild capitalism.
It's good to hear that you actually had a referendum on it. I mean, I doubt that we'd be able to get a referendum on selling land to foreigners here in Britain. I mean, that's positive, but it's a shame that they just messed things up after that. Well, is there anything you'd like to say to the nationalists from various countries that listen to our radio station before we finish?
Yeah, the thing I want to say is that, well, like Lithuanians had problems with Polish, or Lithuania had problems with Poland. We were Polonized. We were fighting each other. Some of Lithuanians feel chauvinist, have chauvinist feelings for Polish. A lot of Polish nationalists have chauvinist feelings for Lithuanians, and I see similar stuff going on around Europe everywhere. So the thing I want to say is we should forget our 100 years long hatred, because we will repeat the history. I don't think that everything what the Nazi regime made was good, because, to be honest, it had imperialist intentions. And because we weren't united at that time, that's why right-wing ideology failed. That's why we are in the mess we are now. So we should forget our 100-years-long hatred and unite with each other to clean up all the Europe out of the trash. And by trash, by garbage, I mean the cultural Marxist ideology. And only then we can make our nationalist utopia our Europe of free sovereign nations.
Okay, well, Mindaugas Sidorovičius, thank you very much for being on Aryan Insights.
Thank you, too.
You're tuned in to Radio